This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me, Darius Thomas.
That's what this show is going to be. A group of friends chatting and catching up for the first time in maybe a week.
Work-life balance. It's a term we've all heard. But what happens when you're married and you work in the same athletic department as your spouse? Today we have Jen and Elijah Gallus of the Georgia Bulldogs. Jen is the Assistant Athletic Director of Social Media and Digital Strategy. Elijah is the Director of Creative Services and Recruiting. Although their work lives don't always overlap, their home life does, and it's become an incubator of sorts for bringing fresh ideas to their work lives.
Are you on time.is, JP?
I will be in 2 seconds. All right, 58. Even better.
Even worse. We'll figure it out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
So on today's show, we have a special guest. Well, let's put an S on guest because we have the first ever husband and wife guest on the show. We have Jen Gallus and Elijah Gallus, both at the University of Georgia. First, Jen, kind of tell us what your title is and what your role is, and then we'll hear from Elijah.
My name is Jen Gallus. I'm the Assistant Athletic Director for Social and Digital Strategy at Georgia. I am responsible for making sure that we have a solid social strategy through all of our 21 sports, plus our athletic accounts and some ancillary accounts as well. I work with our coaches, our student athletes, our administration to make sure that anything that we are doing from a digital and social side is the best it can be. I also oversee all of our graphic design for social and for various other projects in and around, and then as always, others' duties as assigned.
You get a chance to do, like not many people, get a chance to do some work with your husband, Elijah Gallus. Elijah, tell us about your role at Georgia.
I had to check the website to see what my title is, but I'm the Director of Creative Services and Social Media. So currently housed within our gymnastics facility, and I work closely with our gymnastics team. But over the last year or so, that has evolved beyond that to service most of our sports when it comes to official visits and increasingly as it concerns name, image, and likeness.
You guys met on a small campus in North Carolina.
EU.
At Elon University. And it was all uphill from there. Who wants to jump in and talk about how you guys kind of met and how that, you know, elevated?
Elijah and I got hired on the same day at Elon. I was at the time like in sports communications. It was my first real job out of college. And then I was at the College of Charleston before that, went to Elon, didn't know a single person there. And then Elijah and I met some friends, or not even friends, some people that we worked with at the time, invited us out to go have a couple drinks, go grab dinner. And we did not get along the day that we met. But then, a couple days later, were found ourselves in this like orientation, and it was for the entire athletic department and a couple people on campus. And it was easier to, we recognized each other. And so we sort of, I sat down next to him and we just sort of started talking then. And I had a washer and dryer in my apartment. And so Elijah would come over and do his laundry because he did not have a washer and dryer at the time. that's sort of how we met.
Talk about what it's like to get a chance to work with your spouse, but not directly, like directly, but indirectly, and how you all have been able to make that work for so long.
Yeah, so there's not as much crossover, or there wasn't virtually any for years and years. A little more as things evolve, but we really do have entirely different strengths and skill sets. And the University of Georgia, of course, recognizes that. So, you know, her end is so much more on the planning and strategy side, and the actually the creating of the content and the seeing it through to completion. That's sort of my end. So, you know, right before this podcast, we're trying to, you know, work on some NIL initiatives. Facilitating the scheduling of all these coaches to be in the room to be available for what we're up to, that fell on Jen, and then you know I'm over here setting up lights, mics, and microphones, getting it going, you know, and that is in a nutshell really kind of how these last 12 years or so have been at Georgia. When there has been crossover between Jen and I, it isn't so much where we're in the same room at the same time, working with the same folks. It's just sort of an orbital thing, you know, like she's involved for certain. And, you know, there's a lot that she's up to, but I've got nothing to do with. And more often than not, that works out for me.
It's interesting that you met at Elon and now you're at Georgia together. Did one of you get the job first? Did you both apply and get a job at the same time? How did that work out? Because I feel like a lot of times someone maybe get out of sports because the being in the same location is very difficult to line up.
Yeah, no, it's a miracle for sure.
When we were at Elon, we were both sort of, we knew that's not, wasn't where we wanted to stay forever. We had some different aspirations and you know, we both wanted to work at a Power Five school. But at that point it was sort of who got the opportunity first. And that's sort of how we went into it, which was, you know, there were some opportunities here and there with both of us. None of them really ever panned out the way we wanted to. And then Lijah got an opportunity to work with Learfield IMG at Georgia in a really unique setup there. And so I quit my job and we moved down to Athens. I got out of sports for a year because it is really, really tough. But as soon as I got here, I went and talked to Claude Felton, which is the head SID here. And was like, I'm just moving here. I know how, you know, I was been an SID for the last couple of years. If you ever have any opportunities, I'm really happy to help. And he looked at me, he goes, do you know how to stat volleyball by chance? And I was like, I do. And he goes, great. Can you stat Saturday's game? And so I started here and as a volunteer and a like an hourly game day employee working statting volleyball and men's and women's basketball. And then became a GA and we'll get to the career stuff later. But yeah, it was, like I said, it was really who was going to get the opportunity first. And that's really where I think the balance has always been that we've been really lucky that to stay at a place like Georgia for as long as we have, but also have understood that if there's opportunities out there, you know, it's what's good for one of us is good for both of us.
Yeah. I mean, we very nearly ended up at Ole Miss. It was a little bit of a race to see who could get that opportunity first. And in and around the same time that we were talking to Georgia, Jen was talking to Ole Miss about a sports information, you know, opportunity they had there. Yeah, it's just wild the way things work out.
So when you guys play checkers or chess, or is there like internal competition between you two? How does that work out? I mean, it seems like there might be a little, you know, little competitive nature there.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of really, but at the end of the day, like it's, you know, we've been really fortunate that things have worked out the way that they have. But yeah, for sure. I mean, you always want who's getting the, there's always a little bit of, and I think that's anything, but specifically two people who work in sports.
Yep. And again, from a career standpoint, you know, where we are, what strata of the athletic association we're at any given time, it's we are so different, and we do have a different, you know, set of skills that Georgia. The point is, like she mentioned it earlier, what works for one of us works for both of us.
So that means that you guys would have been destined to work with me if you had gone to Ole Miss or me coming to Georgia.
Yeah, we were destined. The stars aligned for us to know each other.
So all of our careers kind of, you guys are a couple of years ahead of me, but we all have been in the SEC for quite some time. Just talk about the difference in when you were, even going back to when you started as a GA at Georgia and Lijah, you as a video producer, how much in the last 10 years you've seen the progression of college athletics and it going in 50 directions, but ultimately seems like it's finally on the a straight path.
Yeah, video producer at ISP, then IMG, then IMG Learfield, then GBSM. I don't know. There's a lot of acronyms, but still the same organization. Back in 2010, it was all about the website, right? GeorgiaDogs.com. We needed to create content for that platform, and that was what we were tasked with doing. That evolved pretty quickly into the video board content for those facilities that had video boards here at UGA. And in and around that same time was the rise of social media. How are we going to address the content needs for that? What sort of crossover opportunities are there? We quickly found out that ASCAP, you know, music license that we had for the stadiums didn't really work out for socials. And then the next big shift has now been recruiting, what we're doing for official visits and the passing of name, image, and likeness. So it's virtually unrecognizable. Like if I could have been told in 2010 what this whole thing would have turned into, it would have been tough to believe.
Mine's a little different. Like I said, I was in sports comm for a really long time. And so I sort of had it in my head that I didn't want to do sports comm for forever. I never had the aspirations to be like a head SID or anything like that. It just really wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I was able, and I was very, very fortunate to get an opportunity to sort of carve my own path here and create different jobs for myself and create different titles and do different things. And so, yeah, I think that with, especially with social, going from play-by-play on Twitter to it becoming part of a revenue stream as well and figuring that all out, it's been super, super different. And I think if you'd asked me 10 years ago if what I would be doing, like my job, these jobs didn't exist 10 years ago. And it's a really neat thing to do a job that, and then I've been really lucky, like I said, to be able to like kind of to figure it out and do it the way that I feel like works best for us.
Clemson gets a lot of credit for the social change and all that. But talk about some of what you were able to do and incorporate that was also a part of that you and your team of content producers at Georgia were able to do in 14, 15 or whenever that was to also be in that conversation of the change of social media that we see today.
From a social side specifically, I think every school does it and should do it a little bit differently because everybody has different fan bases and everybody has a different audience. And something that I think that we've done or we've really tried to do is stay very true to who we are and stay very true to the tradition, to Georgia. It means so much to so many people and there's so much history behind it. And then we've always wanted to stay true to that. And anytime that really great social trends come out and things like that, some of them just don't necessarily fit with what our fans and our audience really expects of us and expects out of us. And so because of that, I think it if we jump on a lot of trends and it comes across as a little bit disingenuous. So rather than doing that, we've tried to stick to what we do and what we know and push envelopes in a different way. And whether it be with a different graphic package for a sport or really going hyper into it. Something I say to my team all the time is make it great, but make it Georgia. And so let's figure out a way to do something really, really great. But if you're scrolling through 150 athletic accounts or sport accounts, that you know it's Georgia immediately without ever really having to look at a logo or seeing a handle. And I think that's just something that I hope we've been really successful at. I think we have been. But I know that it is a lot of the stuff we haven't done. You know, Elijah and the team back in 2014, 2015, the long form trailers and this super cinematic looks, that was something was really like the bread and butter of what we did. And we became a little known for doing that type of stuff.
The way I think about it back in, you know, the rise of social is we treated social no differently than we treated the video board. And what I mean by that is really it's a quality thing. Like nobody is going to tire of well shot, well edited storytelling, whether it's on that video board when you sit in the seats and look up at that, or whether you're looking at it on your phone. So we didn't treat social much differently then. And quite honestly, more often than not, we don't treat it that much differently now. It's just a different way to absorb the content. The team that we've got right now, what we continually harp on is, one, try to, I've got this giant quote on the wall behind me from Tinker Hatfield. It says, if people don't love or hate your work, you really haven't you really haven't done much. So we don't put out that 5 out of 10 vanilla content. And we try to make sure that, you know, people, the buzzword is scroll stop, like scrolling through your phone. I don't know about all that. We've got our diehard dedicated fan base. And of course we're trying to appeal to recruits, but we've figured out who we are a long time ago as a university. And we like Jen alluded to, we stick to that. And that's not a box that confines us. You know, we thrive in that space. You take a look at what Clemson did, and that coincides with, you know, the rise of the wins and losses they had on their football field. I feel like we've been doing things, you know, in that realm since then, and it continues to move forward.
How hard is it, Jen, going back to what kind of both of you said about, like, not jumping on the bandwagon and trends, like, oh, this trend, let's do it. Like, Georgia's done some trendy things, like the Harlem Shake, which is probably one of my favorite videos I've seen come out of Georgia. But talk about that decision of not going in that direction and kind of, you know, making it great, but make it Georgia.
You know, I think with us, it's not that I think trends work for a lot of places. And I think people in other schools have an opportunity where they can play within that a little bit more, and it makes a little bit more sense for them. At Georgia, like I said, it's so tradition rich and it's so tradition heavy. And because of that, I think we've really wanted to make sure that everybody, from our donors and to our fans, to recruits, to whoever looks at it, we really want to be authentic. And being authentic sometimes means being staying really true to who you are. And if we jumped on some trends and things like that, I think it, depending on the trend, because there's obviously things that we do, but depending on it, it doesn't feel like us. It doesn't, you know, I treat Socia as like, it's, you're talking to your friend, you're talking to, somebody that you know. And if somebody, you know, did something super out of character, you would question it, or you would be taken aback by it. And so, I want the people who follow us to treat us, to view us as a friend. And I want them to know what to expect from us. And I know that I want them to also to be proud of that as well.
How many students are you working with, and is that a challenge when you're working with students and they see all these things that they can do on social and trends that they can jump on to push them into thinking bigger picture or more strategically? Maybe we can take it that route.
I think for me is, and I've said this, and Darius and Elijah have heard me say this a million times, that I work in an institute of higher education, and I would be doing our students a disservice if I did not teach them. And so because of that, I think telling and explaining the reasoning behind the reasons that we do things, versus if they say, hey, we have this really great idea, having them walk us through it. But if it becomes something super trendy, or if it becomes something that we just don't think would work for us, telling them the reason why. Hey, you know what? Like, this is a really great idea, and I love the fact that you thought about this and really thought it through. But at the end of the day, like, this is the reason that we go into this, is that it doesn't fit. It doesn't feel like us. It's super different than what we would do. And letting them, and trying to teach them to see something and looking beyond what's right in front of their face.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of students that work with us, and they do have, especially, you know, with the rise of TikTok and all of that, there is a place for that at Georgia, and that resides on these on the individual team accounts, right? So Jen oversees the main account, that's the voice of Georgia athletics as a whole. And certain here and there little blips on the radar that are cool today and won't be cool in 48 hours. You know, thank God for Instagram story, really. Like, cause that's here and it's gone. And, you know, we did the thing, and maybe it worked and maybe it didn't, but it's not, it doesn't have staying power. How we handle the platforms as a whole, it circles back to that, who Georgia is, who, what we're about. There are young up and coming schools, universities that sort of is where they, that's their space. You know, we know what we're about, and the messaging to the students, the interns, the graduate assistants, that work with us, they've all done a bunch of research before they ever got involved directly with us. They kind of know what to expect within reason. And, you know, talking them through the reasons why that idea needs to shift a little bit. Maybe we're not going to execute it exactly the way that they would if they were sitting in my seat. It's not hard to make sense of how we do things when we've been as successful as we have been for this many years.
You both started at a lower level and were able to elevate positions as you grew in the industry. Probably wasn't as quick as, you know, some people may see today, but talk about that rise to those positions and how much you appreciated the journey to get in those seats that you hold today.
There's more resources and money in the room I'm sitting in than in the entire university that we were at before. It's that part of it has certainly evolved. But knowing how to do things, having a variety of skill sets, and that's honestly what we're looking for right this minute. I mean, right this minute, we've got a postgraduate position open. And when we start to interview those folks here in a minute, we're going to try to find those diversified folks. Like, can you open Photoshop and be trusted to at least update a template? Can we send you out with a DSLR and a mic and have you come back with something that we know we can use it's going to benefit all of us?
Yeah, the diversified skill sets are interesting, but how do you, I mean, are the expectations getting too big for some people coming in, or is it because they have more access to the tools when they're younger that the skill sets are already there?
The expectation is a little intense, speaking personally, but I feel like I'm asking of the folks that we're about to bring on, that seems a little heavy, but quite honestly, I had to learn those things because it was a necessity. You talk about being at a place like Elon, we didn't have graphic designers and shooters and editors and audio editors, motion graphic artists. We didn't have all of that. So by default, I had to learn how to do those things. And those experiences have served me well. And it's a little tough to expect someone super young right now to understand that kind of sacrifice, you know, that kind of lack of resources, because it's just different, especially here at Georgia.
I see that, but I also think that kids, like people who are coming up who are in high school, have access to so many more resources than we ever did. They're taking Photoshop classes in middle school. They're getting your phone is becoming a camera. They are learning as a child how to create content for their own social media, which is something that I'm 37, had to think about that. You know, that's something that we didn't have. Our on-the-job training was, I think, a little bit more intense. And this idea that, like, yeah, we do expect a lot of them. But I also think, too, like, we expect a lot of them because we know where they're coming from and we know what they have had access to. So, like I said, I would, like, when I was in college, I didn't take a Photoshop class. We were on Quark. Like, we didn't have that. And so in an ad class, like, I learned to do ads and print stuff and campaigns on using Quark Express and Quark. So, and that was in 2006 and 7. And so now you can get an Adobe license as a student for like $10 a month. And you have YouTube channels where people will teach you everything that you need to know. And so I think, while it does seem like a lot because it's something that if somebody had asked me to do, yeah, like it is a lot. But I also think they're coming from an entirely different place with a lot more resources available to them than we ever had.
Yeah, we've been super lucky in the last probably 2-3 years to find folks. I think the pandemic actually helped a lot of creatives. They had time on their hands, and those folks that were driven, that wanted to get better, that wanted to become diversified, they learned those things because of those resources like YouTube that, you know, Jen was alluding to. If you want to do something, if it's in you anyway, there's no reason you can't learn these things and become proficient at it. We just hired a young man maybe a month and a half ago. He came to us as a postgraduate intern. Photography first. Pretty good photographer. Had one or two examples of graphic design on his resume. And in the last 2 months, just living on YouTube, speaking to the staff that we have here at Georgia, and then the greater creative community on Twitter, learning these tricks, learning these techniques. He's as good as a graphic designer as most of the folks we have around here, and he simply didn't open the program until like a year ago.
When you're hiring positions, like you have a position now, Jen, you've hired people, and we'll get into like the long litany of successful people that have left out of the University of Georgia as creatives. When you're hiring now in this space versus when you were hiring some years ago, does the grace kind of decrease because of, you know, these people having so many resources now, or do you still leave a little room for that and, you know, maybe give someone a chance that may come from a dip? Do you take into account where they come from and what resources they have instead of saying, oh, you're not at this level, we can't use you? You talked about the on-the-job training. There's not really a lot of time for it, as much of that as it used to be, but is there still some grace in that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, my graduate assistant worked at a sign company for 4 or 5 years, wasn't a Photoshop guy. And so we hired him because, you know, you see the talent, you know the talent that's there. Once we hired him, it's where he's really been able to grow and ask questions and play in a space that he wasn't super familiar with. One of our post-grad interns right now, she worked in healthcare before she came in. She was a fine arts major in college, but she worked in healthcare and didn't have a ton of traditional design experience, but had a really unique skill set. And now she's become an incredibly talented designer, because I think you have to give people grace to learn, because if you don't, then they're never going to get further than where they are now. And I want them to be able to go on and do really incredible things. And I don't think that anybody knows, but I don't think anybody's an expert in a field such as this, where things change so quickly and so often.
For me, it's all about ambition. We take a look at resumes, and we take a look at, you know, demo reels and portfolios. And there's got to be something there, right? I mean, there's got to be something that lets you know they understand the tools that we're about to give them. They understand, some version of execution. But we have had such success with folks that are way outside of what you would expect. Darius, you were an English major, right? So you don't have to go down those traditional paths. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of value in not having done that. The Grady School of Communications here at the University of Georgia, that is not some sort of prerequisite to be one of our undergrad interns. Bringing a different perspective, coming at it, because we've been here and working with some of these folks for so long, it ends up being like an echo chamber, and bringing in new voices and bringing in different perspectives, there's a ton of value as far as that goes. And you can't stop someone from being who they want to be. And that's what we're always looking for. And you can tell right off the bat, and interviews more often than not are done on Zoom, but you can still, you know, tangibly figure out who someone, is internally, if they really want to do this. If you can't imagine doing anything else, if the traditional 9-to-5 way of life doesn't really work for you as an individual, and you're just driven, we can teach you everything but that, right? You have to want it. And if you don't, that we don't really have a lot of time for that right now. And fortunately, there's just no shortage of people, you know, tripping over each other to do things like this. And so it's nice to be able to have, some options.
I always say I can teach people to do anything. I can't teach them to give a shit. You're welcome.
Both of you have a love for cooking. Elijah more so outside, Jen for all things inside. And you can send me the recipes whenever you're ready. Talk about that and how you also incorporated that into talking and strategizing through work, through also, you know, your love for cooking.
I mean, my thing is cooking is like my happy place. It's like, it's where I go. Like, if I've had a long day at work, if I've had a hard day at work, there's nothing that I want to do more than open a bottle of wine and just make something at the house. And I can sit in my kitchen for hours and not even turn like music or anything on and just like kind of lose myself in the kitchen, because I think it's, everybody needs an outlet. And I think creative people specifically need an outlet that sometimes isn't necessarily doing their job, like, but also have an outlet creatively. And I think cooking is that for me. And so it kind of allows me to decompress a little bit and like play around with new things and recipes and spices and whatever you want it to be. But also it's a really great way to maybe sometimes find the answer to a problem you've been thinking about all day, because you've been able to just like take yourself out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest thing about these pellet smokers that we bought is it forces you to slow down, right? Like, a brisket's going to take 16 hours. You know, even something that comes together pretty quickly, like pork ribs, that's a couple hours minimum, right? And during that time, you can finally not be running 100 miles an hour and take your mind off of these deadlines and how we're going to evolve this department, how we're going to bring in new talent, what's due and what coach needs what. We can finally do something else. And that's just, everybody's got to have something. And for us, it's, we turned the garage of our house into this Shangri-La, you know, pork heaven. This is what we've got going on. We threw a TV on the wall. Pork, we put a kegerator in there. Pork heaven. Sometimes beef, depending. But we're in the Southeast, so it's pork is king. You know, TV on the wall. We got a kegerator in there. You know, we backed the cars out. Just watching, watching sports, watching a ton of Jeopardy. We go to trivia once a week, just trying to stay sharp, trying to just flip that page. Something that is not sports 24 hours a day. At least, seemingly, I speak for both of us. Just how to stay sane.
Talk about some of the things that have transpired or resulted from cooking, like back when you did the game day series of meals.
We've done a couple. We've done one that we did, this was many, many years ago, when those tasty videos were super, super popular. We did our own version of that for tailgate food, and we asked like fan submitted recipes, or we had it sponsored at one point by a company. To do that type of stuff, which was really unique. But I think really it comes back to, and Darius, you were witness to this, is some of the best ideas of content that we've ever, some of the series and things that we've done, it didn't necessarily come because of cooking, but it came from sitting with friends and sharing a meal and talking and just being like, oh man, that'd be really neat. Or have you seen this? And it just is a way to kind of bounce ideas outside of something or outside of work, and really understanding, like, you know, let's sit on the back deck, let's open a beer, let's have some fun, let's just chat, talk, have a good day. And then somehow out of that, it's another, just a great idea comes out of it.
I attribute most of the brand new ideas and the things that we carry forward with, those are almost always born not in some meeting with 100 people in it, not sitting on Zoom, having fellowship, right? And people two or three beers in start getting pretty honest, and they also start being pretty creative. So we've had a lot of success. Briefly, I was doing a lot of design work, and we would take a look at a space and what needed to be in there, and it was a lot easier just to do it in a more casual setting. Now, certainly, you know, internal meetings have their place, but smoked pork is probably the answer to most questions, really.
You guys work at the same place, and you go home, and your partner also, you know, had a job that day that was in the same department. Do you ever get tired or talk, like, deliberately talk about things outside? I know you had mentioned, Elijah, that the smoking was intended to help you slow down, and you both try and go outside and do different things. But how do you manage that when we work at the same place?
I mean, right now, I think it's a serious benefit. That might sound unusual and if you're in this creative space and you go home at the end of the day and you try to talk that out with your partner, that person probably is sick of hearing your nonsense. We actually drill down to solutions in our place because more often than not, there's some perspective that Jen has where she knows people differently than I do, and probably vice versa. So if it's whatever the conflict might be, whatever the thing we're trying to accomplish is, even if it's just an opportunity, like how are we going to attack this thing? She doesn't just come at it from a perspective that's different than mine, but it's applicable, right? She knows you should probably talk to this person this way. I've had success when I've approached it this way on my end. And because there's not a ton of overlap between what we actually do, it's beneficial more. I mean, yeah, we certainly have to go out of our way to not talk about work sometimes. But really, I at least personally, man, it works out for me. Every husband probably feels like, you know, their wife's the best. Oh man, my wife's the best. I don't know about that, and I don't know they're giving out trophies, but if they are, I'll buy one.
You've both been around for quite some time. Some really big moments. One, we'll talk about two because they kind of coincide with each other. It's a 93K day back in 2016, Kirby Smart's first spring game. And then this year, or 2022, national champions in football. Talk about those moments and what they meant for your careers and how exciting they both were.
93K day, we were very fortunate to work with a ton of really, really talented people. And I want to throw that out first and foremost that I would put the Georgia creative staff collectively up against anybody in the country at being able to constantly produce at such a high level and also turn out kids in a really unique way into the world. But, you know, 93K Day was a very huge collective from a bunch of different departments to, in Coach Smart's first year, he wanted to see 93,000 people at Sanford Stadium for his spring game. And he said it, and we all kind of looked at each other from our fan engagement side and to our marketing and sports comm, creative, all of that, and really everybody just went to work. And it was one of the most unique and emotional, but like in a really good way emotional, days that I've had at work, because you sat there and you look around and see, 93,000 people coming to a spring game. We still talk about it. And it was such a unique thing. And I was working sort of with our social and our sales and sponsorship side with that. And then I think last year with the national championship game, I think it was just a collective sigh from everyone to just being like what a ride it's been. I think everybody sort of like took a step back and started, and at least I hope they did. I know on our side they did. Took a step back and being like everything that everybody from not just the creative staff, but to all of the coaches, all the administration, all of our athletic trainers and nutritionists and academic advisors, and everybody was able to, we've been working to do something and do it the right way. And to see it pay off was one of the, I don't know that I will ever feel that way at a sporting event ever again in my whole life.
Yeah, I mean, for 41 year drought, right? You know, Darius can speak to this a little bit, right? When you were at Georgia, you heard about 1980 ad nauseum. You heard about Herschel Walker, right? Buck Ballou, those guys. And we were so close, so many different times, right? Feeling like the Chicago Cubs or the Red Sox before they got over. You know what I mean? It just had been so long. And being in that stadium in Indianapolis and the inevitability, the mathematical, like they can't beat us at that point in the game, right? In the fourth quarter, where there was no way for us to lose, that it was just like being hit by a wave. Like, we're going to do this. And, yeah. you know, it's nuts talking about it now, you know?
Yeah.
Because we had so much invested personally. I mean, if you combine the hours that we've spent on doing this thing, just us, just personally and selfishly, like, you know, with Darius here for the years that he was here, and all the people over a 41-year span, so many people put so much into it, and you know, it's just a game. This is how we live. This is who we are. It was great. Confetti falling, the whole shebang. I kind of skipped over 93K day and what it meant to me, but that was also fantastic.
I think the biggest thing with the national championship game is it's really still hard to like put words on. It's been almost a year, and I think it's still hard to just like really like to like remember that and to sit there. We say it all the time. You see people say it all the time, and it's something that I don't ever want to forget and not remember, but just like we're living in the glory days, we're living it, and in 40 years people are going to be talking about that. And I think that's it's the testament to what how much, you know, how lucky we are to work at a place that means so much to so many people. And it's the testament to how sports, I think, really is it's such an important piece of a fabric of what it's like to exist right now.
Having gone 41 years, and you know, some people may try to diminish the importance of creative and the strategy and digital and all that behind that. Talk about how Georgia differs from other places that, you know, Georgia buys into a lot of things that make sense for the brand. It is, you know, I've worked at three universities that care a lot about the brand, and Georgia doesn't just say that their brand means a lot. It actually does mean a lot. Like, don't touch that. You can't do this. But the importance of digital and social, and how, even going back to that national championship, having, you know, being in a position to, you know, possibly not have to wait another 40 years for the next one, but how important they've made digital and social and creative being a part, you know, of that.
I think collectively we've made insane strides in the last 24 months of what it means. Coaches are starting to see it more, not just football, you know, and everybody's starting to see the value that at its core, social specifically, is one of the purest communications that you can have, because it's the only thing that you get to control 100% yourself. You don't have somebody feeding you a narrative from your own platforms. You are that. And I think that it's such a unique way to talk to fans and give fans the access that, you know, the people who were there 41 years ago, who were maybe been on the field or remember being in the stands, and you make sure you showcase what it's like. Maybe they're not in the stands this year. Maybe they're not on the field this year, and you can take them in that moment, and you can celebrate with them in a way that they've never been able to do until very, very recently. And I think credit to our admin to really push that and making sure that stays at the forefront, to make sure that we continue to feed that, because they do understand what that's like. And I think, weirdly enough, I think COVID sort of helped that a little bit, because for a full year, like, our fans weren't at our events. And the only way that we could get that to them was via social. And I think that's has been a really important thing. And I think people started to really see, like, wait a second, there's so much that we can do with this. And I know that we do, you know, I know that we are lucky. And like I said, shout out to our entire administration for really believing in that too, and really letting every single person, from myself and Elijah to, you know, Sam and Jordan, and I don't want to name everybody because I'm going to forget some, but Chad and Chandler and Mitch and Sam and football and Griffin and Marge and everybody, that to really understand that this is something that it is important and it can be done at a really high level, and you can have a lot of fun along the way.
You made the transition from SID to digital with very little resources, no full-time help, and had to pretty much build your department, your wing of social media with the rising expedited growth of social. Talk about that moment and those first set of students, or, you know, first couple of years of students, and really growing really good professionals from those who knew nothing about social and Photoshop to now working for big brands.
Yeah, those early years were lean in terms of I had to rely on students. And somebody asked me this recently, like, how do you develop talent and how do you find it? And I'm like, it was out of necessity. Like, I didn't have another option. So at the time, we were trying new things and we were trying to learn and do as much as we could. But, you know, I needed students. So the students that came through in that sort of that first wave, you know, they got real deal on the job training because they had to. And teaching them, and now they, I mean, those students, that group, all of my students, have gone on to do really, really incredible things, in the creative space. And, I couldn't be more proud of them. But I think it's, you know, I feel like we have a knack, for finding people who have a lot of potential and then growing them and teaching them and being really patient with them and being, giving a lot of constructive criticism that isn't just criticism, and saying, I don't like this, and here's why, or I like where you're going this, but it can get better. What if you did this instead? What if you look at it from this angle, and really challenging them to think outside and beyond what, just like surface level, like, oh, this doesn't look good. Well, there's a reason. And any of my students now, any of my GAs, my interns, I do have a full-time person now. And any of those folks will, I know that they're going to say that they could, if somebody sends something to me, one of them will catch something that they know that I'm going to say, hey, maybe we should change this and here's why. And I think there's, you build a camaraderie and you build a team. I've been really fortunate that Georgia has sort of let me build it, the way that I think works best for us, not just what works best for me, but works best collectively. I've worked with some really great bosses over the last 11 years. I've worked for some of the best of the business of what they do. And every single one of them sort of taught me how to do and how to manage that a little bit differently. And because of that, I think I'm a product a little bit of those five or six people and really getting in and really trusting me and believing that, hey, wait a second, she can find these students and she can make them out. And I think the biggest thing that I can say is that if the kids who have worked for me for more than a year, every single one of them has left with a full-time job. And that's sort of where it's at, you know, like it's probably one of my biggest points of pride.
You both kind of alluded to the idea that you want to work with people and hire people that have potential and who give a shit. How do you tease apart someone that has a great reel or the talent that you see in potential while you're talking to them?
I like to throw out scenarios in interviews that are real life. You've worked on X, the deadline is X, the changes have to be made, and you're not going home at 5. You're not going to, you know, this birthday party thing that, you know, your friends are having. There's sacrifice involved in this. And clearly that's not what it always is. And that's not the reality every single day. But when those moments arise, how are you going to handle it? And how verbally right now in this interview, to work with us, are you going to respond, to something like that? You know, I don't know. Jen's got a lot more patience than I do. And I'll tell you this, it's fascinating. She alluded to all the success that the students that have reported to her have had once they leave here. I've got kids. I've got kids that work in incredible places, and it totally is a different way of handling it's those
true.
Folks.
It is very true.
I spent a lot of time working with football, being around coaches, and that is a strange way to live life, right? That's a strange reality day in and day out. And I certainly am happy to not be so involved with football at this point in my career, but you know, there's echoes of that in the way that I handle my business as from a day to day, and what I expect out of the students and the full time people that help us. There's a little bit of a no nonsense, like we're gonna do this, and no one celebrates successes more than I do. I mean, if you check my Instagram story on a regular day, whatever has been produced by who, I tag them in it, right? I make sure that they're getting some of that recognition. Darius and I have had just days worth of conversation since we've known each other about how we would do this were we given the opportunity. What differently are we going to do once we're sitting in that seat? And I think about that all the time. I try to remain true to the person I said I was going to be when this day came. How would we handle these situations? How we would handle our employees? And I want to be the person I wanted to work for. And that's genuinely how I just attacked this whole thing. Jen mentioned constructive criticism, right? There's criticism. There's you don't like this. And then there's 93,000 people in the stadium probably aren't going to feel that way. Or the million people that follow us on our social platforms probably are going to feel that way. Just last night, a video was finished by one of our guys, and he sent it to me 10 p.m. last night. We got a lot of success posting late in the evening. He sent me this video. I'm sitting on the couch watching it. It had some problems, but I didn't just tear him apart. I let him know why. Here's what's going on. Here's what I'm seeing. Tweak this song. This shot's a little dicey. And he understands that's coming from a place of love, right? I'm not just eating him up and telling him. And I did not like that song. But that's not me. I'm not our entire fan base. I can't, you know, pretend to represent everyone.
I lead with probably a lot more empathy than Lijah does. I care very deeply about work-life balance. I care very deeply about making sure people have a second to breathe, to be able to recharge. So I will text any of the folks that work for me on a date. You know, it might be hey, take tomorrow off. Like, you've worked a lot this week. Like, you've really crushed everything that we've thrown at you in these last 2 weeks. Like, don't turn your computer on. Like, let's take the day and also I think that there's just, it's a slightly different, I come from a communications background. I worked with coaches, but in a very different way. So I had to learn how to talk to coaches very, very differently. And so my experiences are super different. And so I think that, like I said, I think the success that I've had in terms of like finding new talent and weeding out talent is like being able to really listen to what they're trying to say and really understanding, like, wait a second, this may be somebody that can help us. This may be a little rough around the edges right now.
How proud are you of the group of former students and workers and former athletes? We were able to do that. I think other schools may get a lot more credit publicly than Georgia, but Georgia has had a lot of former students who've come through.
It's a sneaky number of people we've put out. I think it's just what it is. I think there's so many who are doing so many really great things that it's sneaky. And I don't know the reason why. I don't have a clue. I think it's just we focus so much time and energy in growing those kids and making sure that they are going to leave here as the best professional and the best person as we can make them in the very small amount of time that we have them. And so I think we just kind of go about doing that. And then we want to, you know, I don't know. It's super sneaky.
And a lot of that, to your point, and then we'll let Lijah answer. But as you said before about your students, it was out of necessity, because when I got there in 13, like Georgia had a history of people in the sports industry. When you think of Maria Taylor and you think of, you know, host on this show or that. And it, a lot of the female students that we had wanted to be that and wanted to be in front of the camera. But then social kind of changed because the industry changed because nobody was really going to the website. So you didn't need as many student reporters and all that. So to kind of shift back to Elijah, it's like, talk about how proud you were, you know, over the course of all these years to be a part of the success of, you know, professionals.
No, that's absolutely right. A part of it. I honestly have a hard time taking a ton of credit. I mean, we have been lucky. I'd like to think that we're trying to source this talent and we're cultivating these folks, but they are driven. And I believe to one extent or another, they would have been successful, but it's just, it's not, they, if you talk to them though, it's coming from a different place. They believe that this opportunity to work in Georgia and work with our team has been beneficial, and it amazes me how talented some of these kids are, right? And how quickly they adapt and pick up brand new skills they never knew before, and how good they are so quickly. It took me a long time to be good at graphic design with a video background. And these photographer and video kids come in and pick up Photoshop like it's nothing and are cranking out things, And again, it is a different world, but they do have those resources to learn. But that's who they're meant to be. And I'm just happy that they hung out with us for as long as they did. And it does not hurt that our proximity to Atlanta and those sports opportunities that they have right down the street in one of the major American markets. We just lost a kid to the Falcons, and he didn't quite finish with us to take that opportunity. But I didn't begrudge him for that at all. Like, you got to go, man. Like, this is an incredible opportunity to work in the NFL. And the idea that you can come out of this office in a college gymnastics setting and take one step to the NFL, that speaks to, you know, what we're up to around here and the quality of content that we're producing, not just for football, but for all of our sports.
What would be your advice to young creatives, both trying to get into the industry and those who may have been in the industry for a few years and trying to take that next step to elevate to maybe one day get to where both of you sit today?
I think I would say take advantage of like every opportunity that you're given. Knock on all the doors. I think if you're in college right now, that's the only time that you have the ability to literally ask anybody any question, because under the guise of you wanting to learn, and a lot of people will be a lot more open-minded to talking to students oftentimes. So I think taking advantage of those opportunities, I think really working your ass off, learning new things, not getting pigeonholed into something. I mean, I was an SID. I started at Georgia as a volunteer stats person. And, you know, I sit as an assistant athletic director now. And it's because I've been given a lot of opportunities, but I've also taken advantage of learning new things. And when new things come up, making sure that I try to get my hands around as much of it as I can, so I can, if I have to talk to somebody in development, I know how to do it. If I have to do sales and sponsorship and revenue generation, I know how to do it. And becoming super, super well-rounded. And I think also remembering at the end of the day, we are not curing cancer. We're not. This should be fun. This should be the most fun job you have. And if you're not having fun doing it, you probably should find something else to do, or finding a way to make it, to find that inspiration and that fun again. Because working in sports, especially in the collegiate side, it's a lot of hours. It's a lot of time away from family and friends. It's a lot of sacrifices you have to make from a time standpoint. And if you don't love it, it's probably not worth it. And so, and then if you don't love it, and if you fall out of love with it, that's okay too.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.